This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey everyone, the following is a special sneak preview of the new Gloves Off podcast, which is an unfiltered look at the week's events in goalkeeping that's hosted by world-renowned GK analysts Bill Reno and Saskia Weber. And if you want to make sure that you never miss an episode of any of our fantastic new shows, all you have to do is subscribe to the Union GK app. For more info, go to www.theuniongk.com or download the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making Gloves Off possible, and on with the show.
Welcome to Gloves Off. This is week 2 for us, Saskia. We're back at it, so I'm excited to get back into it. I'm Bill Reno. We're covering the women's game here with 1999 World Cup winner Saskia Weber, and I'm excited to kind of dive in. There's a number of things. I'm broadening the scope today more, so I'm looking to cover a few things, but can you remind me what games you covered over this last week? I did
the Angel City the Angel City game against Houston with, okay, Paige Nielsen scoring it at the death, and on her return, I don't know if everybody knows about that listening, but on her return, she just got traded from Angel City a week ago to Houston 2 weeks ago, and on her return to the stadium, and she's a beloved player by the fans here at Angel City, and with no time left on the clock, on the corner, 0-0, and she scores off a corner kick. I mean, it was like a Hollywood ending for her that you couldn't write any better, but it broke Angel City's heart, I will tell you that.
Oh, that's funny. I vaguely or loosely reminds me of whenever I'm a big Texas Rangers fan, or A-Rod came back to play Alex Rodriguez, and you would think, oh, he did like a number of years for us, played well for us, but like the fan base was not happy anytime they saw him back. So it's always like when players come back and like a former team they played for, the fans are like still supporting, but it seems like it's kind of either or, like they'll either support you or the boost come quickly.
So. Well, I think that they looked at it like, they didn't want to lose Paige, and there were signs in the stadium for her, like supporting her and everything like that. I think some fans are like, you can't do that, but that's how it ended. So that's the game I covered this weekend. And honestly, goalkeeping wise, it was nothing to talk about. It was probably Jane Campbell's least active game, and she's been getting shelled.
Yeah.
And same with Harchich. The game was played all in the middle of the field. Harchich came up with a really good breakaway save off Alozia in the second half. Came out just actually, she let Alozia kind of, she kept her depth and kind of like, sometimes we talk about that. We see goalkeepers, they just, okay, it's a breakaway, I got to go. And I think Harchich kind of read that her defense was gaining on Alozia. So she kept her depth, but she kept her shape. And Alozia kind of was, I think, hoping that she would bite, and she didn't. And so she had no place to play. She played she played it right into her, like into our block. So it was a nice save. But it was well thought out. Like, it wasn't like, for us as goalkeepers, we're like, all right, that was well played. Like, that was thoughtful. She's like, I'm going to hold, I'm not going to come. My defense is catching up. She's running out of ideas, and she won the duel.
Yeah. No, I think it's funny that 1v1s have kind of turned into this like, rock, paper, scissors battle that penalty, yeah, that kind of turned into, like, so penalty kicks, like everyone knows now if the shooter is like looking at a corner, like it's just fool's gold, like don't fall for it. And I feel like these 1v1s is like, now we're starting to see some complexity to it, which is
it's a chess match.
You'll see times where people just overthink it. Like, well, they think I'm going to do this, so I need to do. And it's like, no.
Yeah. Like, so, no, she handled it well. But other than that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure Campbell's thrilled to have like a quiet game as well. So it probably works out for both keepers there.
Yeah, to get a clean sheet. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, before we hop into, I thought this was pretty relevant news, and I haven't seen you may have info I haven't picked up on yet because I didn't check right before we hopped on. But I think it's probably worth mentioning Alyssa Nair not finishing the last game. She got replaced by Mackenzie Wood. I think I forget the minute mark, but it was some of the second half. I was trying to go find the clip where something happened, but it seems like it was one of those kind of innocuous plays. It might have been off a goal kick. It might have been one where she was sliding for kind of a free ball. She played clearly in pain for a bit. And last I saw, there hasn't been any news. They're all kind of waiting to see. I'm sure they're doing a 100 test over there. But it certainly puts a bit of a mix into the goalkeeping situation, which was already kind of up in the air to begin with.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the play either. I spent a horrendous travel day trying to get back from Florida, where we were calling the game at a studio. But I haven't seen it, and the first thing that came to my mind was like, how serious is it? And you know, we're 2 months before the Olympics, and I think we had decided, like, look, if Nair's clean and healthy, she'll be the starter. But if she's not, now you have to take that serious dive into who is truly your starter.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're up in the air on that. We think, you know, Jane Campbell should get a look for sure. Casey Murphy, like I said, I don't think is playing at the top of her game right now. I think, you know, I'm concerned about her positioning on some plays and her pace, in a sense, like her lack of explosiveness. So I don't, I'm kind of, it's interesting. We have a little interesting situation going on here.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those, it's like, at what percent do you play at, or can you play out where you can still keep your starting spot when you've been the number one for so long? If that you're at 98%, you're at 85%, you're 60%, you know, at some point, like the threshold gets crossed.
Yeah. But you have to say to yourself, are the keepers so, is one keeper so much better than the other that we would play her at 60 or 70% over a healthy keeper? And if that is the case, then you have a problem. Like, in my opinion, like your keeper should be so close that it doesn't matter who's starting. And if that's not the situation, then you have to find keepers that are that close, that if somebody goes down, there is no hiccup in the, and I wouldn't play a keeper. If my keepers were set up properly, then the keeper that's at 100% would get the nod.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think it's a competitive tournament or game if you can play your goalkeeper at 60% or 80%. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you really playing at? So,
you have to remember the other team knows. So the other team knows that they have their scouting reports. They have everything. Nair's not at 100%. Bombard her.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, I don't even know what it was. If it's a knee or a leg, it's a move her, get her going laterally, do like get her out of her comfort zone because she's not 100%. Her explosiveness won't be there. Her range probably won't be as much. Like in a tournament like the World Cup or like the Olympics, you play who's at 100%.
Yeah. When I couldn't really tell where the injury happened, but it definitely felt like at the first part of the second half, just moving for her was difficult. Now that's like right after it happened. So who knows what the Olympics are going to look like, but no, I think you're absolutely right. And you know, if I'm on the other team and I'm seeing the goalkeepers moving a little odd, like it's kind of blood in the water, but, you know, like you're
absolutely.
Yeah.
So. And it surprises me when teams don't do that. Like when you see like a goalkeeper take a break, like have to have, you know, the physios come on or whatever, and something, there's a knock. Why aren't you just going after her then? Test her. And teams don't seem to flip on with that. Like I've seen it game in and game out in the NWSL. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just bombard the keeper right now and test her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to slide over to a couple games from the past. We had a few like kind of two, almost like two weekends of games from the midweek and the weekend. But Caitlin Rowland is one that kind of caught my eye. She's played her third game of the season, played in mid April, Prue comes in for Bay FC and takes a spot there. And then now Caitlin Rowland seems to have won the spot back, at least for the time being. And I think for her, the thing that's really standing out about her game is she's playing a pretty tactically high level, but it's kind of sloppy at the moment. I think that's in some sense to be expected, you know, that some rust is kind of shaking off. I mean, she's been largely on the bench for the past 5-6 years with Kansas City, with North Carolina. Exactly. So I, you know, it's she's in a tough spot, but I really enjoy watching her play. And I'm not sure kind of what's your caught your eye, but as far as like what I'm seeing from Roland, and we'll roll some clips here, but she's really front footed. Like she's trying to take responsibility. That opening clip is a great example. This is all from the last game against Orlando, but she's on the front footed. She's not the fastest goalkeeper, but she's coming forward. She's challenging stuff. She's trying to play a complex game, which is, I think, really applaudable, but is obviously difficult. It'd be much easier to just sit back. So I'm not sure what's caught your eye, but as far as like front-footed goalkeepers, I'm a little surprised to be hearing myself saying like Roland's one of the more front-footed, but I've really enjoyed watching it so far. It's been good.
Well, I think that gloves off. I wasn't impressed with Peru. I think that, and we had talked about this actually on Inside the 18, that I felt that although, you know, that first game of the season, she got player of the match. She had, I think, 6 saves, but I felt that the majority of those saves were of her own creation. Like they weren't good positioning. They were kind of like creating a mess out of situations and then coming up with the save. And so I was like, I'm not like kind of bought in here. I think that with Roland, I think she's trying to establish herself as this is my area. I'm going to try to keep things as clean as possible. Like, I like that she's front footed coming off her line. Like, you're not going to play. If you play in behind my D, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be on it. It's a great save. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be on it. I'm going to be strong and big. And they need some stability because what they did was Didasco didn't start this game. And which I was really surprised at because Capri Didasco is hands down one of the best attacking outside backs in the league. She's a leader on the field. She was one of their first picks, not in the expansion draft. They pulled her, you know, from Houston. And, you know, you've lost a leader in the back. So now you're putting a Roland in who, you know, has plenty of years in this league, like has the experience, can be a leader. And I think she's just did a great job this game to just establish her range and her zone.
Yeah, I love Roland's like after, I'm just seeing this now to be honest, but I love her like after play facials of just like, and that's a great one too, of just like simultaneously annoyed but relieved at the same time. but no, I don't know, I'm not sure what you thought was kind of limiting Prue's game or if things were just kind of stacked against her at times, but I think for me, it felt like, and again, gloves off, but it felt like she unfortunately is like a product of a goalkeeper trying to play big when they're a little bit undersized, and when you're undersized, right, like you gotta move your feet. So you can't just get set and go with power every time. So I'm not sure what you saw with Prue, but like when I see Roland's game, I'm like, the hands are good. She's not the quickest, right, but she's moving around, but she's thinking about how she needs to move. She's playing with them inside her skill set, where I felt like with Prue was just at times, it's all energy and she's just kind of feeling her
right
body.
She was like, she was relying on her athleticism. And what, you know, when you get to, you can do that up to a certain point, but when you get to this level, like everything else has to come into play. Your positioning, your timing, your organization and everything, and not just relying on your athleticism, the energy, your explosiveness, because if you're not like, she was making things more difficult. You know, I don't think her positioning was great. So yes, she made a great save, but did you have to make that save if your positioning was proper? And so what you see here with Roland is I feel like her positioning is more secure. It's better. I like her like she has depth when she needs it. She's off her line when she needs it. She's, you know, trying to keep everything clean, no rebounds. That's what you want. And I think when you get an athletic, energetic goalkeeper, a lot of times that energy translates into rebounds, into like, you know, tips over the bar that shouldn't have been tips over the bar, or now corner kicks. And I think that that's what I saw in Prue's game.
Yeah. Well, and it is kind of odd to me, and this will be a bit of a transition into like the next piece here, but it is kind of odd to me to see Roland, who's been a backup for like, I mean, I think 2018 was the last time she was a starter, but it's been a while. And now she's coming in, and for the best league in the world, how odd is it that you have a backup coming in? And that's not to say every backup can do it. I understand that. I think we have this odd setup where the depth is almost like a question mark. You know, like how good are the backups? How good are the starters? And we see a shift like this, and it's like, oh, like the team, the goalkeeping position hasn't lost a step here. Like it's still playing at a good level, if not improved. Whereas I think you see, you know, any other top league in any other sport, you
there's take a drop off
for a bench player like that. That rarely happens.
Well, and I think it doesn't happen all the time, mostly because you're just not playing your backup keepers. And we've talked about that a lot where, you know, you have keepers that just they're sitting and sitting and sitting and, you know, training isn't enough. You have to get into situations. You have to get into the game, which is why we've seen keepers leave the NWSL and go to Europe and start for teams. And it's not the best league, but they're getting games in and then come back. And like, so like a Roland, yeah, she sat behind Murphy forever, you know, and now she's getting her go and she's making the most of it. And yeah. So, and I thought, to be honest with you, I thought coming into the season, she would have been their starter from the get-go.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Anyway.
Yeah. How many keepers in the league would you take over like an 80% Nayer at this point? I mean, what? Just give me a ballpark. Would you say it's still kind of a few, or you feel like you'd open that up?
Like over, are you there?
Yeah, still here, sir.
Sorry, no, I lost you.
Oh, you're good.
Hold on. I don't know. That's a really good question. Honestly, it's kind of like I'd have to think about that. I wouldn't not take Nair. I think because well, it's 2 months, so we don't know the extent of the injury and if she can get to 100% by then, or even close to 100%, then she's on your roster. You know, I think right now, you know, you look at a Campbell, obviously a Murphy, because you need some experience there right now. But I think that's a teeter. Some people will say a French. I don't know. Like, it's a good question. I have to really think about that.
Well, and I think that if I'm guessing ahead, I mean, anything can happen, but if I'm guessing ahead, I think that's going to be the scenario where, and even if it's told that she's 100%, I think with this being so close to it, like when you're not finishing games for whatever reason, like it's just going to cause speculation. So obviously we wish for the best for Nair's return recovery, but I think the Olympics come, and if it doesn't go swimmingly, like this is going to get talked about. And certainly, I mean, we're going to bring it up. I know for certain. So, but I do want to transition over to the non-American goalkeepers in the league. And I think last weekend with Kaylin Sheridan and Berger coming in with Gotham, we've got a rare situation where we have two goalkeepers who are not American playing, which is, I don't think it's the first time, certainly, but one of the few times. So I'll roll a few clips here, but I think when we talk about the sophistication and responsibility in the game, with Roland here, I think we start to see it a bit more with these two as well. I think probably distribution wise is probably my main critique for Berger, but for both of them, like they're trying to do more than just sit back in the line and be a shot stopper. So although I love to see Americans playing, like, you know, even that little play there, like if her just kind of batting the ball down and like waiting to like play out, like you just don't see that very often from a lot of goalkeepers are just getting the ball and rolling. Like she's intentionally pinning that down, and then now she's going. Like that sophistication has been really exciting. And so for me, if that's what it's going to take to lose a spot for an American keeper, okay, that's a good level. I mean, that's good dealing with a kind of a dirty ball there. But it's got to be like these top level goalkeepers that are coming in if they're taking spots for my money.
Yeah, and I've been impressed with Berger. Like from the get-go, when she got the start, you know, you're kind of like, you want to, well, there's a Sheridan. You want,
So this game, this has both Sheridan and Berger. So you'll see them both back to back.
So I've been impressed with her. I thought she came in and didn't kind of miss a step in a sense, like transferring over to NWSL. I like her timing. You see it right there. I like she has a presence in the back. She comes out for crosses really well. And she doesn't seem rattled. Like there wasn't any oh, she's getting the start. This is a new league, big stadiums, the best league in the world, like faster play. That takes a bit to get used to. And she didn't seem to miss a step on it. And I was impressed. I was like, okay, now I understand why they brought her in. She's like a calming person back there. And again, I agree with you. If you're going to lose a spot, if an American keeper is going to lose a spot, that's the level of goalkeeping that they lose a spot to.
Yeah. And she's coming from Chelsea, as many know. And I'll be honest, I get really annoyed. It's probably the best word when I hear Brits say, oh, we have the best this, we have the best that. I just feel like they're constantly claiming that, like, oh, we have the best this. And certainly goalkeeping is something that they're always saying, oh, we have the best goalkeeper, we have the best goalkeepers in our league, or this and that.
Can't claim Berger because she's German.
Well, and I was like, is it even a goalkeeper? And so,
yeah, it's like, it's saying, one thing if it's Earps or something like that, but it's not Berger, yeah. And she's German. And yes, she was playing in England, but that doesn't mean you have the best homegrown goalkeepers.
Well, I think, to be fair, the narrative kind of transitioned to Earps maybe a year and a half ago, but there was a time where, like, oh, hey, Berger's like the goalkeeper. And, you know, I feel like when you put a certain badge on, whether it's Barcelona, Chelsea, whatever, like people just naturally assume, oh, like, yeah, you've got to be one of the best. So I was a little suspect on her coming in because, my thought is like, yeah, like, sure. But we all know, like, in every other league in the world, there's these bottom feeder teams that, like, the top teams are beating 4-0, 5-0, 6-0 in every league. Except for the NWSL, like that's kind of a rare thing for us. So, I was a little suspect, but no,
she came in and one of the top goalkeepers in the league, and she's showing that. I mean, that save off McCaskill's, that shave off the free kick, like, and again, you come into a new league. First of all, you have to learn a new system. You have to catch up with the speed because, like, pace for pace, it's the fastest soccer being played. You know, across, and that's why it's the best, and it's the best league in the world. And it is. And I agreed because it's top to bottom, because, you know, your last place team, Utah, could turn around and they beat Carolina this year, you know? And so every game, some games are blowouts, but not really. And so you have, in most leagues, those bottom teams are, there's such a difference. There's such a, but here, as far as goalkeeping goes, she walked in and made a statement for me, which I think's pretty impressive. And, like, nothing shocked her. She came in. She's like, this is my game. This is how I play. And, of course, you know, Sheridan, again, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, hands down. And she's the full, in my opinion, Sheridan's the full package. Like she owns her space. She, you know, her organization, her communication, her timing, her positioning, crosses. And then, of course, Sheridan's one of the best distribution-wise. So,
well, even just that last play here, this time's up well. You talk about full package. Like, part of being having the full package is like having a plan B. It's like, this play doesn't go her way, right? She realizes, oh, I'm a step off this. What does she do? Like, she figures out, okay, hey, how do I solve this?
Besides fouling, but she pushes wide. She's like, okay, I'm off. I'm getting beat right now, but I can become a defender in a sense and just push her out wide. So there's absolutely no angle, and it gives my defense a time to recover. That's another level where you see other goalkeepers will come into the league. They'll miss that. And they'll just say, oh God, I missed it. And let the person dribble on. I've been impressed. I've been impressed with Berger. I really have.
Well, and they feel much older than a lot of our goalkeepers in the league. I feel like there's just so much energy with a lot of our goalkeepers out there. Just like, I'm going to go solve it by outworking you, which, look, you got to work hard. I get it. But you know, there's just a lot of thought going behind it. I'll say just on the last note here for her, these plays like drive me up a wall. Like for me, this is a red card. Like I hate this. I don't know if I can swear that, but I hate this sort of stuff. Cause like, that's like season ending stuff right there. Like
it is. And I know it's a free ball, but in my opinion, nobody's going for the ball there. Only Berger is. Yeah. And so what do you have? You have just two players. One of them's their own player, but just running into your goalkeeper who's called keeper, who's coming out. She has the right of way. And if you did this to a person going for a header, it would absolutely be a card. Like if somebody was coming up to do a clear ahead and you have San Diego running into the goal, there's a card there. Like yeah. you're not going for the ball here. And even if you are, you have to go for the ball in a safe way. You're just taking the keeper out.
Well, I'm not a big fan, and I don't know if now is the time to get into the minutiae of like goalkeeping methodology, but I'm really not a big fan of like driving that knee up simply from like a safety factor. Cause like if that player, I can't see who runs into her, but if she's on the ground and Berger has that knee up, like it's a good chance that knee's going to the temple, and like that's incredibly unsafe. So like I hate seeing that sort of stuff. And I know I've seen times where goalkeepers have been given reds for a high knee or a high cleat on this sort of situation when it was extreme. But like on one hand, the goalkeeper, I don't want them using their body as a weapon. But on the other hand, you know, like she's exposed, right? So what is she supposed
well,
to
you do? And I agree with you. Well, I agree. You do have to protect yourself in some ways, but at the same time, if you put that into the context of a field player, two people going for a head ball, and that field player put their knee up into another field player running on, it'd be a red card,
yeah.
Right? And so the goalkeeper, in a sense, is going up. I've never been a fan of the knee up thing. I think it's very old school, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you can break it down into stepping into getting your momentum up, but the knee doesn't still need to be up in the air. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost, I mean, people talk about it being like a shield for you, but like the reality is it's more of a weapon, you know. And like you'll see when keepers go up and bring that knee up, like people will pull out of that. And in some sense, that does protect you by scaring them off. I understand that, but I don't know. Yeah. These plays are just kind of like double-edged sword of like, well, someone's going to get hurt because people are out of control. Right. And honestly, if Berger doesn't call for it, for me, like it's irrelevant. She's got to the ball first. You don't get to just run into the 18 blind and hope you get it. Like that's not, you know,
correct.
Like three people collapse on this play from the collision.
Yeah.
So anyways, but I could go on. That's one more and more bigger soapboxes, but So transitioning to a bit of a larger scope here, and we just mentioned how Berger was coming over from England, but I wanted to take a look at one of a young goalkeeper from Man City. So one of their last game, I think it was their last league game for Man City, which Man City is more than likely going to win the league. I think if they lose out and Chelsea wins out, you know, you could see a swap there, but Man City's in the driver's seat. They won like 15 games in a row at some point, something ridiculous. Like they've done well this season. But they did drop a 2-1 result to Arsenal. And I thought it was fascinating to see Kiera Keating, who's a 19-year-old, starting for the top team in England. Whereas I think for our keepers, what are they doing at 19? And so I've tried Keating for a little bit. And so I know a little bit about our game, but going back into it, you know, watching it, I'm not impressed. But it is interesting to see the resources and the stage she's on. So you think of our 19-year-olds, what are they doing? What track are they on? And I think you watch Keating here, and I'm not going to say this is like that impressive with the number of things she's doing. Again, 2-1 loss here. But I think for me, what England's doing right here is like there's a longer track here of like, okay, what responsibility can we give our keepers? How fast can we push them up? Where can they get going? Whereas for our system, like it's very tough if you're just relying on the NWSL to get there, because you're going to sit, you know, you might get drafted, you know, like there's so little chances and so little room for error. But here, like this is really fascinating. So I'm not sure on your thoughts of like 19-year-olds in different countries versus like the US, but it is awesome to see. But I'm also kind of jealous at the same time to see this, because I know there are a ton of American keepers that can play at this level.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you're sitting here saying, we need, like, you want goalkeepers to have experience. And you know, do I think a 19-year-old, you'll see a 19-year-old goalkeeper starting in the NWSL anytime soon? No, I don't. I am kind of the old school that keepers do get better with age. And yes, you lose a step with age, but you gain such a perspective and understanding of the game. And so the mistakes that you're seeing Keating make are from being immature, right? It's coming out, not putting a clean block on it, like, and then just getting back with depth and trying to make up for the mistake and the like bad distribution. I think that those come from youth. Why aren't you pushing your team up in this situation? Why do you have a defender standing right in front of you with the ball bouncing around at the top of 18? That comes from experience. Get out of my six, get out of the box. Understanding that you have to clear your defense first. Why aren't people marking up? Is she 19 and not understanding that this is a chess game and you have to move your chess pieces? And so that comes from experience and age. Now, the argument there is, well, how do we get experience? Right? We get experience by playing. So in 5 years, she could be one of the best goalkeepers in the world because at 19 years old, she's playing in front of 40,000 people, you know, for Man City. And so do you roll the dice and say, we're going to develop her and we're going to throw her into the mix? I don't think that that is the philosophy here. I think that you have enough goalkeepers that have so much experience that it would be hard for a 19-year-old to unseat them. And it would be hard for, when every single game is so competitive, it would be hard to justify developing a player in the run of a season.
Yeah.
Like that is that right there. It's not a good save to me that, you know, yeah, her coming out and open palm, smacking the ball down right to the top of the penalty spot. Like that comes from immaturity instead of continuing that ball on the way. First of all, why'd she go with one hand? She went with two hands. She would have held it. But that comes from immaturity. And they're lucky they didn't get punished on it. So there's your thing. I wouldn't start a 19-year-old. But again, I don't, like, what's their depth roster here? Who is she starting over?
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Yeah. I have to look at their depth chart, but I know England has had a lot of young goalkeepers that they have been leading to, which has been really, I mean, Earps is like the only goalkeeper that's over like 25 that's been in the national team picture. There's a lot of these younger keepers with like Hampton, McIver.
But they haven't. So, but see, then there's the thing. They have an Earps. So do we say we're not going to fill it with another 30-year-old, a 28-year-old and stuff like that? We have an Earps. So we're going to start developing the next generation. And so that's the argument with the U.S. team here. Are you going to keep putting goalkeepers in there that are the same age or older? Or are you going to say, look, we're going to have an Air. We're going to have whether it's a Campbell or, you know, a Murphy. But then our next goalkeeper is going to be 19 or is going to be 20. And we're going to start developing that goalkeeper. They might not play, but they're going on the trips. They're in the training. They're in the atmosphere. They're going to the Olympics, what have you. Although I'm not sure if they'll take three to the Olympics. They might. And I believe you do. I believe that other spot, that third spot, should be that developmental keeper. You know, and yes, we have the youth teams and everything like that, but I don't think you load up your keeper position with your eldest players. Now, then the argument goes to it, you put the best, if you've earned it, you've earned it. And that's true too. But you do have to develop these keepers on a big stage at some point. So with the NWSL, is your backup keeper, you know, do you have two 30-year-olds and your third string that doesn't travel, does travel, is like 28, 29, like, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You know, because look at on the field, what do you have? You have, look at all these young players on the field, you know, that are coming in 16, 17, 18. And the reason you can do that is obviously because you can give them 15 minutes in a game and you could start developing them slowly. You can't do that much with a goalkeeper. You're not going to sub the goalkeepers. We all know that. So, but I still think on your roster, and a lot of the NWSL teams do that in their training. They'll have, you know, like Niku trains with Angel City. You know, and you have like 16, 17 year olds that train with New York and stuff. So that's good. That is that development. And they are starting to look at that and say, well, this will be our next round or next generation. We wouldn't start that player. I think obviously, you know, Man City said, well, let's start the 19 year old. But yeah. I think you're seeing the mistakes and Arsenal should have done much better on those mistakes. Bottom line.
Well, and I think like it's interesting with like the investment and the growth in these leagues. Cause I think you're absolutely right. In some sense, it's like, man, you see those mistakes in the NWSL. Like there's not a lot of patience. I mean, I'll be honest. Like I think Anderson getting pulled from starting spot, I understand it, but I don't think it was like, wow, she like threw four goals in the back of the net. It was like, no, it's like not a great game, but like that's the margin of errors like in this league. Whereas in England, at most other leagues, like you're going to have that.
Well, conflict. And I think uniquely with Angel City, I think that knowing that you have a Haracich and an Anderson, and I think the margin of was very slim.
Yeah.
But I think coming into the beginning of the season, you're at the bottom of the table. There were mistakes, whether Angelina, you know, is almost ready or not ready, you know, Didi will be. I think that first game was really shaky for Didi, but I think she's settled in. The goal the other day was totally defensive stupidity, like gloves off. I mean, everybody stood around and watched. It was like, what is everybody doing? It's literally the last kick of the game. Right. Like throw everything at that ball and get it out of the box. And everybody just watched the ball roll to the penalty spot and, you know, Nielsen put it away. And whether Haracich in another day could have come up with a save, it went through like four people. She was screened and, you know, but I think that, you know, that's unique to know that you have, and I think we're seeing that with more teams. So like Chicago now, you know, Nair's out. Are we going to see a drop off in level or will it stay the same?
Yeah. Well, and I love the margins of error here because it pushes the ceiling high. And the next time you call a game, watch how often talk about bad defenses, watch how often the goalkeeper's life is more difficult because the defenders drop into space and they don't put pressure. They don't step to something. Like they think, oh, I need to go play goalkeeper too. And they like start grabbing things. It drives me up a wall.
So we're watching those clips from Man City and I'm like, why is your defender in front of you? Yeah. Like, why has she dropped deep? And that comes with, and that I don't agree with, like that is your job. Your job is to clear people out of there. That was hammered into me by Tony Chico and everything. Get these people out of your area. This is your area. Own it. And I think you saw Rollin doing that. So okay, you don't see people dropping in on her. She's established the saves she's making. She's established her range. And now let me play in this, you know, don't drop in on me. Don't do it because I don't need you. Go play, put pressure on the ball. And another level of goalkeeping is telling your defense to do that, but also your defense's job is to make the shot that's going to come off so predictable and such a small window of angle that it's an easy save for you. And that's your job to help manipulate your defense to force that shot. And if you're not doing it, you're just getting blown into the back of the net. It's on you, but it's also on your defense. And I think you saw that with Houston, with Jane Campbell. I mean, everybody's talking about Jane Campbell making 12 saves and, you know, she's got 40 something saves on the most in the league. I'm like, what does that say? It's not a good thing. Like, I'm like, great for Jane Campbell. Horrible defense. Like,
yeah.
What does that say?
It's a team effort to defend the goal. Not like, oh, it's just the goalkeepers or we need multiple goalkeepers in the play. It's like, no. Like field players, go do your thing.
Goalkeepers, exactly.
Do their thing and that'll work. But I don't know. I think when I zoom out a bit and I see all this kind of from like a higher point of, okay, this league's doing this and this league's doing this and this national team, on one hand, I like how England is really pushing these young goalkeepers, and I watch Keating and the reality is like, there are colleges where I would start the current starting goalkeeper over Keating at that school. Now, not everyone, but you know, for me, it's like, okay, I know we have, in my opinion, better 19, 20, 21, 22 year old goalkeepers that I would play over Keating. So I like that they're putting some investment. I like that we've got some depth, but also I think like the disconnect for me is seeing, okay, it seems like there's a bit of a pathway in England and with some other countries, not all of them.
And we don't have the pathway.
Yeah. And it's very kind of like, well, whoever shows up, you know, the fact that we don't really know who Nair's replacement is right now is like,
Well, I think we're going to start seeing more of a pathway here with the start of the, with the, you know, USL Super League.
Yeah.
And like, you know, just seeing Marley Canales get drafted today by Spokane and stuff. And like Marley was a great player in the NWSL, you know, and so she went to UCLA, you know, and just that for goalkeepers in itself, like, you know, you're not playing, you're sitting on the bench in the NWSL. We don't know who's really going to play next for Nair. And if it's going to be the quality that Chicago needs. And so, but with the USL, with the USL Super League, those goalkeepers that are sitting third or sitting on the bench, now they have another decision to make. Now they're like, hey, I can go start and I can get these games in, and it's all fall, all winter into the spring. And, you know, and now we are developing. And I think what you will see in the USL is younger goalkeepers. I think you will see that because that's the pool to pick from. And I think you'll see goalkeepers fresh out of college that'll get that'll be starting, where here when you get drafted, you're not starting. You know?
Well, I don't disagree with like the minutes and opportunities. Here's the thing that throws me for a loop is I know for a fact NWSL coaches have a hard time putting value on performances in Europe because it is the massive spectrum it is. You know, you can play in one league, and that league can have a huge spectrum of like talent, or you can play also in Europe, but it's a cow pasture, right? Like they, for a coach to really know, okay, well, second division here or first division here, what does that mean? But then add in the layer of just being aware, you know, who is playing where, who do we know of this person? I know.
Like you got Fallon, you know, over at Man U.
Yeah, great example. Yeah.
You know, and look, Fallon's a great goalkeeper. And she can develop into a great goalkeeper. She's not getting the as much minutes at Man U. And I know she loves it. Love having her on Inside the 18. Love everything she does with her, like, marine biology and everything. So shout out to Fallon. But don't lose sight of her. Like, and I agree with you, you know. And but then the argument there is, Bill, is, but then you have a Berger come over who's playing for Chelsea. And she's just, like, in my opinion, established herself as one of the top goalkeepers in the league from her first two games.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think this, whereas the men's game, it's much more, okay, this league's here, this league's a little better, this league's a little better. You're getting this huge, like, well, like the top half of this league is better than
right.
this.
And you're so, getting like your top four yeah. teams in the French league are good. The yeah. rest are shite, right? Yeah. You know, same in England, same in Spain, you know, Sweden. And so, yeah. And so it's like, but not the NWSL. So. Yeah.
So, and so when a player goes to the Super League, like, what is that going to get valued at? And time will tell, but I'm a bit pessimistic just knowing how difficult it has been for keepers to do well in Europe and get a chance in the NWSL. Because I know a number of times they go do well, they play Champions League games, they have good performances, but then they come over here and they're like, oh, I didn't even know you were, okay, whatever. That's basically like a summer league, right? Like, the coaches struggle to understand that. Just because they're so hyper fixed on their league, which I get to some extent. So
yeah, well, now with the influx of European coaches we have in the NWSL, like they do know, like the quality of their leagues, whether it's in Spain or like, you know, Becky knows the quality of the league in England and stuff. So I think maybe with the different coaches, you'll see like a bit of a switch with that. You know, obviously New York wanted Berger and pulled her in.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's getting better, certainly, because there's just times where in the past it's been, you know, just total night and day sort of like disconnect. So I'll give them that. And I think with the league just becoming more European and more international as time has gone on, like there are a lot of positives to that. But we'll see what the Super League ends up being. I don't know what the shelf life will end up being, but
I know it's a tough one because look, as good as the NWSL is and as deep as the NWSL is, we know any given day, any team can be any team. It's great quality. it's not easy. The talent pool isn't that deep in the United States to start a whole nother league. But if you do it right and you build it, I mean, like I said, most of the players that I'm watching getting drafted by these USL Super League teams, they're all NWSL players. So, you know, they played at the NWSL level. So if they're just they're bringing it over to there, then the players will be there and the depth will be there. It's going to be interesting. I mean, look, more power to everybody. Play, you know?
Well, I say give them a year, and then year two, like, let's have like the American Cup, where like you just pair the two leagues against each other. Like, give them a year to get their feet. Okay, that's fine. But then like, let's move off that. Like, let's have some competition. Let's play each other. Like,
I always felt that I felt from the beginning that they should be combined in some way, whether it's Division One and Division Two. I think the thing, and you're never going to find in American soccer, is relegation. It's not going to happen. The investment is too important to the private investors, that like millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being put in, and then your team being dropped to a second division is not, I think in the women's game, that won't work here, because investors will be like, well, I didn't buy into this team to be in the second division. So no, I don't think relegation is the system here. Do I think it's the right system? I think it's great. I think it's really exciting. I love watching it in Europe and everything like that. Adds a fire under your belly because you don't want to be dropped. And there's a lot of financial repercussions if you go up or if you drop down.
Yeah.
So, but I do think it'd be nice to combine the two leagues somehow. You know?
I'll sidestep my soapbox on promotion now, but yeah.
No, why?
Well, no, I know. So the problem is I can go for an hour on that. I'll say this. This is my one thing on it, since you're provoking me here.
That's the point.
why do the limited owners, who admittedly have invested, why do they get to box out other owners? Because, and I think Wrexham's a great example, right? You have American investors who want to get in on the men's side. What do they do? It's like, well, it's like there's not really an option. So what do? They go overseas. And yeah, I agree that the current owners, like, I mean, I would understand, like, yeah, I don't want to lose my investment like that. But how many other potential owners? It's like we're protecting these small few for the rest of the country. And the fact that there's already a second league popping up, there's investors that want to get in. And for whatever reason, couldn't get into the NWSL.
Right. And so they're going to the Super League.
Yeah. So for me, it's like, why isn't the NWSL having a system to bring in more people? And expansion is part of that, I know. But if overnight, right, you could have a dozen or so teams pop up, like, how much more
can you have? And that's true. And I don't know if I'm not on the business side of it. And I don't know if a lot of that, I know we've gotten off goalkeeping, but I don't know if a lot of that has to do with the amount of money you have to put in to be a team in the league. And that's just not feasible. Like with I'm sure the difference is huge, whether it's $50 million to start an NWSL franchise and it's $2 million to start a USL franchise. That's a big difference for investors and what that entails, like, you know, what you have to bring to the table in order to be an NWSL franchise. And we're seeing that ceiling get higher and higher because of Angel City, because of Bay, you know, Utah, and what they're providing, and Kansas City building a women's soccer stadium, you know. And if the USL Super League teams, that's not the level of financing they have, then, you know, you don't want that drop off. You don't want a Kansas City, like a, you don't want a Yankees against, I don't know, pick a really poor baseball team. You know what I mean? Like, cause then you have that disparity, you know, like you don't want that. You don't want the people that have all the money buying all the great players, and you're never going to get from the bottom because of that.
Yeah.
So no, there's a lot that goes into that, I'm sure.
No, for sure. And to be fair, there's a lot of different, I mean, across the country, across the world, there's not just one promotion relegation type, in the same way that there's not just one kind of fixed, like, you can have different structures, you can have playoffs, you can have.
Well, that's something else I was going to get into, because, you know, the Europeans think we're crazy that we do playoffs, but that's the American style. Because, and I agree with, like, when you talk MLS and stuff, especially the European players, like, what is this? It doesn't matter how you play all season, like, points or whatever, like, you get into the playoffs and you could be horrible all season, but now you've made the bottom tier of the playoffs and you could win the whole thing. And they don't understand that. They're like, no, it should be points and you should win the Shield and that should be the end of it. And I'm like, yeah, but Americans don't work that way. Americans like to watch tournaments and they like to watch playoffs and they like to still hope their team has a chance. And that's for television and that's for the sport. That's how all are, like, they even changed college in the playoffs and got rid of bowl games for football. Yeah. So it's like,
yeah, those knockout games are a real addiction. I'll say it's something to it. Yeah, no, it's fair. That's so fair. Well, at the end of the day, like for me, it's, and I think this is like a big separator from the women's game to the men's game. Like the women's game, very inclusive environment. When you think from like how things are run from an org, how things are like the fan experience, like how things are presented of the athletes, like it's much more holistic and there's much more, hey, let's get people in. Whereas the men's side, it's a machine. It's like, it's so commercially driven.
You have Giroud coming to.
Yeah, you know, and I get it. For me, it's like, hey, man, like how can we get as many people in? I think that's where my mind goes with promotion relegations. Yeah. Like whatever, and there's a million ways you can go about it, but how do we get people in? How do we get people for this? The fact that we have two Division I leagues fighting, like, you know, it's going to be fun for a little bit, but after time, like one of those leagues is going to fail. And I'm going to guess it's the newer one, you know? So,
yeah. The men try to do it too. So I think, but I think back to goalkeeping, if we go back to the youth and stuff like that, like I would love to be in that training. I would love to be in the meeting with Man City and hear like what they're saying to Keating. Like what are their, like, is it like, okay, you did better this game, but you know, you have to understand that you can't just knock this ball down. That ball has to be parried around the post. It's got to be parried wide. And that comes with more reps and more reps and more reps. Or if they're like, hey, you did great. Like, because she's not doing great in my opinion. But if you're willing to roll the dice, and I guess in my thing, like if she plays like that, then no, I don't, like Man City might win out. They might win the Shield. But like, if I was the other team, I'd be like, oh my God, follow up everything and go after her. Because like, she's, you know, her defense is dropping in on her. She's not organizing. She's not communicating. She gives up rebounds. You know, she's youth. She's not comfortable on her restarts or on like distribution. Go after her.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's tough to say who our top 19-year-old is because it's such a big disconnect from like in product to 19. Like there's so many tiers there. But for me, it's like, am I trading my top 19-year-old for Keating? Like, no, I'm not. No. You know, and that's not to take anything away from Keating's game. I mean, she's obviously like,
no, but I agree with you. I would say if she was in the college system, like if she was, you know, if she was at UCLA, would she start over Aniku? No, you know, whose game's more refined and stuff. Or what's her name who just transferred from Stanford?
That Campbell.
It's Campbell. And so, no, who's going to – well, Niku's not at UCLA anymore. She's transferring. But you know, she wouldn't. She'd sit, absolutely no. She would sit behind Campbell. And so, but that is the evolution for goalkeepers here in the United States. Like, it behooves you to go to college and play. And even if it's for like two years or 3 years or whatever, like, I don't think coming out of high school and going right to pros, we haven't seen it happen with a goalkeeper yet. I think we could see it happen probably in the next 4 years. Do I think it's the right move? I'd have to see the goalkeeper to me would have to be absolutely something we haven't seen, like something special.
Yeah. Emmy Allen leaving North Carolina early. Like even that was kind of a eyebrow raiser where she's 21, I think. And, you know, so like 21, you know, she's got a few years under her belt already, but I think she still had one, if not 2 years eligibility left. Even that one was rare to see.
And yeah, it was rare. I mean, I think you're playing with UNC, so you know, I know, obviously we all know the training that you're seeing day in and day out with Anson, and you're also playing with one of the top teams in the country and the systems and playing in the top the top league in the country, which is the ACC. So, you know, you're seeing the Florida States, you're seeing them. So you're seeing a lot of competition of the players that are in the NWSL now. So, but 21 is young still. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we'll call it there. I think that we've covered just about every topic with goalkeeping now, but
I know.
That's good. Well, I think it just, I think it really, the fact that it was kind of a winding discussion today, I think kind of really speaks to not only where the position is globally, but really where the position is within the U.S. of, I mean, we talked about the two leagues where the college system fits in with that, the depth chart, the styles of play. I mean, there's just a lot to kind of dive into it. So no, it's good, Saskia. Same time next week, we'll do it again.
Absolutely. Hey, and guys, you can always check us out at the Union Goalkeeping app on your Apple or your Google Play. You can get it, you know, check us out. We have Inside the 18 always. And honestly, listen to us on Believe Network. So,
yeah,
you can reach out to me on the Union Goalkeeping app. I'm just at Saskia. So DM me.
Yeah, at Bill Reno for me. So, that was good, Saskia. All right. Well, hey, next week, you'll hear from us again as we cover the league and the globe as well as everything goalkeeping. So,
Let's do it.
All right.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.